This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week's episode of Meat in 3 is inspired by the reemergence of Cicada Brood 10. We're talking all about insects.
Some people are calling crickets the gateway bug because that's a great introduction to what edible insects is all about.
So we found detectable levels of cesium-137 in 68 of 122 total honey samples that we had.
What is that?
Is it tarantula?
No, what is it?
It's a tarantula.
Oh, and they're going to eat it? No.
Listen to Meat in 3 wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. We're recording the week of Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. We're recording remotely with some folks in Asheville, North Carolina. And big shout out to Heritage Radio Network. Give us support. Become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. So Asheville, North Carolina, last year we were lucky to talk with some of the craft beer legends there from Highland Brewing and Asheville Brewing. And this year we're with another, the second oldest brewery in Asheville, North Carolina, is Green Man Brewing. So let's introduce our guests. Let's start with Dennis and then Eric. Just briefly introduce yourselves.
Hey, I'm Dennis Thies. I'm the owner, co-owner with my wife, Wendy, here at Green Man Brewery, coming to you live from the South Slope in downtown Asheville, North Carolina.
Asheville and Eric.
Hi, my name is Eric McDonald. I am the, tap rooms operations manager / problem solver / utility, whatever you want to call it, here at Green Man Brewing. I've been working here at Green Man with Dennis for about 4.5, almost 5 years now.
Well, that's great. So last year in our Asheville episode, we got really a lot of the backstory from the late 90s of what was going on in Asheville. And it's still like an amazing story, Dennis. When did you discover Asheville and the craft beer scene? Because I know you came in a little later to this business.
I did. I've been in the beer business since I was about 12 years old. I first discovered, and I'll tell you about that in a little bit, back to Asheville. I discovered Asheville really exploring in 2008 when we were making a decision to move here from South Florida, where we're from. Our family business, which was a Miller Coors beer distributorship, was being sold, in the process of being sold. And our Wendy and our four children, Wendy and I's four children were very young, and we decided to move to Asheville. And I drove up here looking around, and I had printed out a sheet from an internet search of breweries of Asheville, and there were 5 at this time here in 2008. And the first one that I went to visit when I pulled into town, sure enough, was Green Man, and I discovered this little place, and I was just blown away. The other 4 are Highland, French Broad, Pisgah, and Asheville Brewery. Those are kind of the original 5, and we were the second oldest.
Wow, it's not really that long ago, but it feels like a long time ago. Tell me about the Green Man mystique. It's like this Green Man. What is that? And how does that relate to Asheville? Like, I know you're in the mountains. Well, what's a Green Man?
I've been accused of being him on several occasions and asked if I was him on many occasions. The Green Man is very, very mythical and he's the man of the woods, the protector of the animals. There are scores of literature and art and even old construction in Europe that pay homage to the Green Man. Puck in A Midsummer's Night Dream was a Green Man. Peter Pan, we took it a step further. If you go into our original taproom, Dirty Jack's, you'll see lots of Green Man. You'll see Yoda. You'll see Kermit the Frog.
you'll see Frankenstein, et cetera. So it's a pretty wide open, we just like to say is whatever you want it to be. And what we do here is our interpretation of the Green Man is that logo and our great beer.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then what, just give us some of the changes that happened. So you came in, you bought the brewery. What did you make certain changes intentionally, or you just kind of evolved as the industry evolved with the brewery?
It was a gradual evolution for sure. So when I purchased the brewery in 2010, we had been around already for about 13 years, but it was only a tap room and making great beer with a great vibe. There was no distribution. If we were doing glass growlers, if you wanted to take it home, you had to fill a growler, you know, so it was very different back then. There was no social media. When I bought it, there was no website. It was sort of this undercover, underground, grassroots, killer tap room with great beer and a cult following that you just kind of knew about it. And the locals to this day support that place. We call it Dirty Jack's. I'll tell you why. And it's just a great vibe. Our original brewery, just up the street from where I'm sitting now.
So Dirty Jack's, that's the original tap room.
That's the original, correct. It's a garage with a 15 barrel. Basically, all of our beers were born there. And it's got a great vibe to it.
That's cool. And when you went there, you must have learned from, you know, being in the beer distribution business. What were some of the first things that you, thought about changing in your model?
Part of your question. That's a great question. Sorry, I didn't answer it there. But it was so much to talk about. And we've been around so long, 25 years next year. And my tenure here is almost half. But my first idea as an old beer guy, an old distributor, was to take this brand that I thought, didn't know for sure, but thought was a great brand, a really great brand that just needed a lot of polishing. You know, there was no file. It was a piece of art that someone created and painted that was hanging outside of Dirty Jack. There was no file. We had to start from scratch. But the real core answer to that question, what my idea was to distribute, to put the beer on tap at places around town, in growlers, at the Earth Fair, in the Whole Foods, now Whole Foods, to have Whole Foods here then, and make it available, more broadly available. To fast forward to today, we're in 7 states, in cans, bottles, and kegs.
Wow, that's great. And then let's get to Eric. When did the Green Mansion open? So that's is that your new tap room or brewery as well as tap room? What is the Green Mansion?
Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, last year, you know, we weren't even, you know, I don't even think that we were open when we were to celebrate the 5th year of the mansion, the mansion's existence, because it was right in the middle of COVID. But so the thing about the mansion, and I don't know if you've visited before and just seen how, like, how massive it is. It's a 3-story, beautiful facility, very upscale, and it's its own experience. Whereas I feel like it's a very interesting dynamic for a brewery to have 2 tap rooms that are just completely different experiences altogether. And there are like diehard, like Dirty's folks that despise like the mansion. Like, it's too nice, it's too clean, it's too this, it's too that, it's too new. But it really is on Saturdays, you know, we kind of call it, you know, every Saturday is kind of like a festival day. And it's just a fun experience. There's plenty of room. I mean, you're right in the middle of the South Slope. You know, everybody talks about this neighborhood as, you know, this is like the epicenter of Asheville's craft beer scene. Well, the mansion is the epicenter of that. So I think that's cool and very significant.
What do you mean by the South Slope?
So there's a little neighborhood, if you want to call it that, or an old warehouse district. I mean, you're really still walking distance to downtown, but it is on the south side. And because of the way the geography works, it does slope down. And so that's where Dirty Jack's was. First brewery tap room in Western North Carolina. And then it just seemed like over the years, everybody saw what a good idea it was. I mean, 10 years ago, the bartenders wouldn't even walk out of the place with cash in their pockets because it was such a scary neighborhood to be in. But it just seemed like everyone started kind of moving in. So now, you know, like I was saying, 10 years ago, sketchy little garage with great beer. Now there's, you can walk to, there's 15 breweries that you can walk to, like short walks, you know? So, it is the part of town where if, you know, if you ask somebody, hey, where are all the breweries at? They're like, you want to go to the South Slope.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis, so how does that happen? I know that kind of happened in Denver too with Wine Coop Brewing. It's like, we don't think of Asheville or that part of Asheville as a rough neighborhood.
Not anymore.
What does a brewery do that changes a neighborhood?
Well, we were the first one here, and we mentioned that Dirty Jack's was the first. Actually, this Green Man, it's a little confusing. Green Man is the second oldest brewery in town, but Dirty Jack's was the original tap room for all of the Carolinas. When it opened, there were no other brewery tap rooms, as Highland, who is the number, you know, the oldest Asheville brewery, didn't have one. They didn't have a tap room. It wasn't really a thing. When I answered the earlier question about what my goal was for Green Man initially, it was distribution. And that was the main thing. We spent many years in the grind of developing our infrastructure to grow and add states when the main thing just continued to kind of rock on. And to this point, half of our business is tap rooms. And how did they get to that point? I mean, Asheville became very respected as a beer destination, but it really kicked in hard when some breweries you might have heard of, Sierra Nevada, New Belgium, Oscar Blues, opened in this part of the town. Two of the three are in Asheville. And then WikiLeaf opened in 2014, and I can see them from my office. So it was just a very dense place to come and have a brewery beercation for tourists to come get a hotel. It's very pedestrian. You can walk around from one to the other. It's a lot of fun.
That sounds pretty cool. So let's talk about the beer. So going back to when you first took over Green Man, what were a couple of the beers that were classics that you've kept? And have you improved on them? Like, was the porter, was that one of the originals?
It was. A fellow by the name of John Stewart was here when I took over in 2010. And we really had three beers that we were, to this day, as the foundation of our brewery. And they're English style by design. They're an ESB, an English style IPA, and a porter. And to this day, they are still the core of our business. They're beloved, respected. Green Man Porter is consistently voted as the best dark beer of Asheville, which is a pretty legit thing. And they are still here and rocking. And, you know, a porter coming from Florida was something that I was leery of. Like, what do we need porter for? But it's a real thing here in the mountains. And, I'm having one right now.
Well, it tells you that's a serious beer town if people are drinking a lot of porter.
That's for sure. But so it's the three, the ESB, IPA, and porter. They're available in bottles and cans and jugs. And to this day, they're still around and they're beloved. We're very fortunate to have great distribution on these beers as well. And to not be known as just for one or two, we have, you know, past that, we have some other ones, but those are the original three, the three wise men, we call them. They're pretty legendary.
So after you took over, what was your strategy for expanding into other states? Did you go to one state? Did you go to several states?
We kind of do it slowly.
How did you roll that out?
Well, we started with North Carolina. And
it was a very heady time. We were, you know, this is 2012 now when we were really starting to expand, and it was bottles. No one thought about the can phenomenon that it is now. So we started with Charlotte, Raleigh, Wilmington, which is on the coast. It took a couple of years to solidify our home state. And then we entered into Greenville, South Carolina, which is only about 45 minutes from here, finished out South Carolina. And then we did Tennessee, and it was all pretty methodical and pretty slow. Then we did Georgia, then we did Florida, and we just launched Alabama just a couple of months ago. So all of our seven-state footprint are contiguous, and pretty proud of the work we've been able to put together there over the many years, and our distributor partners are so helpful. We're pretty mixed bag there. We've got Anheuser-Busch wholesalers, Miller-Coors wholesalers, and independent craft beer distributors as well.
So you, even it's in the Southeast, are the laws for distribution and totally different from each state, or are they similar?
Well, they're pretty similar. Most states are franchised now, or, you know, it's the big trap conversation that small breweries and distributors always get into is the right to move type franchise protection, where once you go with a distributor, you feel like you're locked in for life and you can't get out, you know. It's not really worth all of the anxiety, because we haven't really found that to be too much of an issue. So, I mean, no, they really aren't that different. The tax structure is very different in every state. And I can tell you, the volunteer state is the world's worst for that. It's a great state. We love Tennessee, but man, the taxes are brutal.
Oh, that's something new. I never knew that.
Yeah, Tennessee is the highest beer tax state in the country, followed by Georgia, I think, which is our other highest. I think New York's pretty high too.
I think New York, yeah, definitely. New York gives some break to New York State breweries. But you're talking about for bringing your beers into those states. Is that where the tax is?
Yeah, you have to pay state excise tax. Everyone pays federal tax. We all the breweries pay federal tax, which was cut in half under Trump's administration a couple of years ago. But you know, the laws aren't.
How much do those taxes matter for you? Like, we can talk, you know, you're a business guy. How much do those excise taxes matter?
They matter the bigger you are. You know, it's not a lot of money. For a small guy, because you're not making a lot of beer, you know, but it adds up. These are small breweries, you know, every penny counts. It was cut in half. That was a big deal, especially right when COVID hit too, before COVID, and it was solidified. So it does matter. You know, it's a hard business. Making beer, owning a brewery, it's a hard business. So it was a really great thing that happened.
Yeah. Hey, let's go back to Eric. So if you want to talk about, let's talk about opening the Green Mansion. And, or Dennis, why did you guys pick that building? You know, how did the design form? You know, was it built as a brewery and then you just put on the tap room? I want to hear more about this Green Mansion, because it's
got a cool vibe. Eric, let me cue that up for you real quick. For everyone listening, you might have not properly explained the fact that we have two tap rooms. I think Eric said it the best. We have two taproom experiences, which are right next door to each other. And you got the old Dirty Jacks, which is called Dirty Jacks for a reason, because the locals nicknamed it that. And then we have the brand new Green Mansion. And it was really because the property was contiguous, and we were able to buy that property, and then we built the Green Mansion from the ground up.
Okay.
So go ahead, E.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it is interesting, too, that when – you know, people come through and they're like, what was this building before? You know, there's this assumption that it had to have been something that was like, that we renovated or something that was added on to, but you have to explain, you know, and they just get blown away when you explain to them, this was all brand new construction 5 years ago. It in terms of even like, even the draft system, like I want to say that there's a big giant hotel downtown that has one similar, maybe as big, but I mean, the draft system is is three stories as well. So it's one of the biggest, most impressive, most complex draft systems that I've ever seen. And I would be interested to see one more so in town or even nearby. It's just like a beer geek's, it's a beer geek's dream just to go into that, you know, go into that giant walk-in and just looking at it. It really is.
What is it? Like how many beers do you have on tap there? How many tap or bars do you have in this mansion?
Yeah. So you've got the main walk-in. It's massive. It's the heart of the system. It's there it's on the second floor. And so then we have a fob system where we are sending beer up to the third floor bar. And then it also sends it down to the first floor bar. And it's just been great for me as kind of like, as far as like my beer education to work on the system and figure out the problems. And you're working against gravity and temperature and all these things on this huge scale. But so downstairs, first floor, just a really nice bar. It's copper topped with like the acid etch. You've got 18 taps down there. You've got merch, you've got to go, all things Green Man. And then you go up to the third floor and then you've got a bar that's at least twice the size of the first floor bar. So, we don't have bar seating back yet, but we're working on it. And just a beautiful covered patio, great view of the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's just a great place to come. I know that, craft beer, tap rooms, a lot of them are, you're sitting at a picnic table in a gravel lot, that's it.
Back warehouse somewhere.
And believe me, I've been to a million of those, but this is definitely, it's its own experience.
When you're up on the third floor, Jimmy, you're inside of our packaging hall, basically. So when you're standing there having a beer, you can see our keg line, our bottling line, and our canning line, all while you're sitting there looking around. And uniquely, all of our ready beer is pumped over from the middle building. It's a little confusing. I told you where we actually brew and ferment all of our beer in another building, and then we pipe it over. So we don't actually do any brewing in here, but it is pretty cool.
But you can see the workings, and then you can also see the mountains.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So yeah. You can look, and there's actually a window on our patio, so you can be looking out over the Blue Ridge Mountains on a sunset, or you can look to your right and see what Dennis was saying is that you're not looking at the brewery, but just our massive packaging hall. It's all bright tanks. It's all packaging. That's where our bottling, our kegging, our canning, storage, everything is. So, you're looking at you're looking at the operation firsthand. And I've even had people on multiple occasions, this is a weird phenomenon, they ask me if it's real. Like they asked me if the equipment is actually real. Like, do we actually make beer with it?
They think it might just be a Disney World stage set.
Yeah, they think it's some sort of elaborate prop. It's just a strange phenomenon.
Well, our original concept was to put a small little brew house in there that was from Germany, a nice copper, Schmattenhofen, I forget the name of it. Jimmy, I am not a brewer, by the way. But as we got into the project, we're like, man, brewing beer in here is going to be tough. So we flipped it to strictly packaging. And when we had to address canning, which came along, I remember I told you we started with bottles. We were bottle heavy, and when the can movement came at us hard, and we had to do something, and we had to get a canning line. But luckily, we had space for it.
Well, I'll tell you, I like what you're doing. I'm going to go back to your background, Dennis, because,
sure.
And I'm also going to ask Eric about who you got started, because secret, my uncle growing up worked for an AB distributor up in New England, and we grew up with everything. They had liquor as well. So I grew up with the Budman t-shirts and all this other stuff. But definitely, like, from that era, I know that the old school guys like that knew about sales, and they also knew how to take care of their customers.
That's very, very true. Yes. And, you know, that's so true that you mentioned that. That was the first thing that when I started with the brewery and distributing, it was me, the main sales guy, the main delivery boy, the main growler filler. I would go into accounts, and we were out hustling the other few breweries that were in town because we serviced. We're like, you want to getting new accounts, getting kegs on tap. I would say, I can get that keg, I can have it here in like an hour if you want. So it was all about service,
Yeah, my uncle told me a story years ago. This is like must have been 50 years ago that one of his in a town there was one of his top retail accounts, and the bridge that goes, he was dependent on the bridge traffic, and the bridge was going to be closed for a renovation, which could have taken 5 years, which would have put him out of business. And I think my uncle actually convinced the local state representative to not close the whole bridge when they did the construction. Mm-hmm. And that's what a sales guy did back then. He actually has saved that business.
That's great. And beer distributors are so tied into their community, and it's such an important service that they provide. And they're so big now, some of these big ones, and the consolidation is what brought me to Asheville. So if I can keep it to under 2 minutes or less, I can give you a synopsis of my experience if you want to hear about it.
Oh, keep going, man. It's your show.
my life, really, I'm kind of like a one-trick pony. I mean, I've been in the beer business since I was little. And one of my first memories is walking into the same Winn-Dixie after my dad picked me up from school and going right to the beer cooler. And watching my dad look at it and then go to the back and load this cart and then come and fill the cooler. And I was fascinated by that. He was merchandising the store because he was in the area picking me up from school. So going way back to 1951, my grandfather in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, was granted the Miller franchise and started a small beer distributorship and had Heineken and Champagne and Pabst as his first brands. And he grew it. And then my dad and his brother took it over and grew it and grew it. And to a point where I was getting more involved after college, and we sold it in 2008. And the beer business was very good to me and my family. I have so many rich experiences with people and delivering beer to accounts as a beer driver. The vast variety of people that you meet and the types of places you go into. Another one of my first memories is unloading a train with a forklift. I mean, a train, they don't do that anymore. Wow. Yeah. It's in the repack room. I can't get that smell out of my head. The repack room, you know what that is, right?
No, what's a repack room?
Well, beer distributors, they have a lot of broken beer and they want to put it back together and resell it. So it's kind of like the beer mechanic room where all the beer goes to die, or you have to try to save it. That's the repack room. And it stinks in any distributorship. So, as the later years, I was a sales manager. I have a lot of experience in sales. Then I was the vice president of this company. It was called William Thiessen Sons. And I was very fortunate to have this experience and a lot of years in the beer business and traveled a lot. So in my later years, in my 30s, I developed a real appreciation for good beer and was able to travel to Amsterdam to visit Heineken. I've been to Newport, Oregon to visit with Rode. I've been to Mexico for Corona. They have an annual Corona meeting, which was then Gambrinus. And I've met people like Jim Cook, had dinner with him on several occasions. The guy's a legend. Jack Joyce, rest in peace at Rogue. Of course, Sam at Dogfish. The world has changed. When you heard about Stout's Brewery in Pennsylvania, Carol and Ed Stout was one of our brands. They went out of business, I think. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I knew that. We had talked to her years ago.
And here in town, we've got some legends like Ken Grossman, Oscar Wong at Highland, and Kim Jordan, New Belgium. I don't think she's there anymore, actually. So that's been my experience.
You must have a million stories. And we're going to jump to Eric just for a second. Eric, I want to hear about you, how you got started in the business and how you ended up at Green Man.
Yeah, so my background was always in, restaurant business management. I worked out in Denver. I managed places out in Boulder, Colorado, and got to see kind of the start of what I thought craft brewery was. You know, like you were out there and you'd go to the beer case and you'd see all the usual suspects, and then like oh, there's this six pack of this stuff called Fat Tire, you know, like in 2000 and whatever. And started getting into it and I was responsible, I was a beer buyer for a long time. I was, responsible for building these tap lists, and it just ran, and it was just right up my alley. Like, I started homebrewing at home, making beer, and just like getting into like, homebrew communities. And then over the years, I just realized I had to get more specific and I had to get more focused and I had to work in breweries, forget the whole, not trying to, it was all fine dining, restaurant management, things like that. And I just wanted to focus wholly on this, and it became a real passion of mine, and it still is today.
So when did you start at Green Man?
I started about 4.5 years ago. I was actually, I had my bags packed for Denali, Alaska. I had a job. I had a job offer on the table to go work, to go manage a brewery out there.
Was that 49th state?
There it is.
Yeah, I think we knew Jay Bullen was a brewer there for a while.
My bags were packed. I was ready to go live in like some cabin out in the middle of nowhere until I could figure out how to get my family to come out there. So I was days away from leaving for Alaska, and a friend of mine calls me, and everybody in this town, wants to work at Green Man. So I got this call from a good friend of mine that was bartending here, and was like, "Hey man, they got some spots over here. You need to come get it." So I think coming to work here for Green Man was a lot better than taking off for Alaska. So it was one of those.
And Denali, that's also a seasonal location too. So
yeah. But, so I would have had to have, spend a lot of nights out in the woods by myself. So I don't know about that.
Well, great. Well, hey, listen, we're off to a great start. We're going to be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Become a member and support us at heritageradionetwork.org. So I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here at Beer Sessions Radio. And this is our second Asheville, North Carolina show. We're talking with the guys from the Green Man Brewery. The second oldest brewery in Asheville. So we're about with Eric. He's the manager of the Green Mansion, which is the special brewery tap room that they have at the Green Man. Let's keep talking. So you started working there. When you first went in there, I guess I'm curious about how you guys built this tap room to be like a draw. It says Saturdays, it's a beer festival vibe. You know, how did you guys evolve that? Did you open it with this concept in mind, or did it take a while to figure it out? Because it sounds like it's a big space and there's probably a lot going on there.
It's a huge space, you know, like just like the building maintenance alone, is a full-time job. And I mean, it really is like, you know, we were talking about the brewery district, you know, the South Slope. I mean, it's just this, I mean, it's kind of like the entryway, you know, to the South Slope. We just got permission to put, you know, a big giant Green Man, backlit, like really nice signage on the front, because we weren't allowed to do that before. And people thought our building was like a hospital or a fire station, you know, or something like that. So, you know, the city's weird about signage, but now we have these, you know, this is big Green Man face, you know, that like lights up like the bat signal at night, you know, and it's just, it just draws people in, and it's a destination, you know, and it's sought after. We were talking about how Asheville is, you know, so on the rise and so, you know, and just growing and growing, and a testament to the popularity of craft beer in Asheville. We had on days when it rains, especially during COVID, when we had some capacity concerns, there'd be a line of people. There'd be 100 people down the sidewalk standing in the rain, waiting to drink one of our beers out of a plastic cup, you know? So like, it was wild to me. It was just really wild how the popularity grew and like surged over one of the weirdest times that our country's ever seen.
I just want to go back to the evolution of your beer. So Dennis, when you took over 2010, Green Man was noted for its English style beers like Porter, ESB, English style IPA. When did you start adding different styles, and what were some that took off that you're still making? I know there's one called the Trickster IPA that I'm dying to try.
Well, I'm wondering if I could take this one, Dennis, because I've actually just poured myself one.
Absolutely.
And if that's cool, I'd like to kind of talk about it a little bit.
That sounds great.
As long as you, Eric, remember the original name of Trickster was, do you remember that? It was
Too Hop, Timmy Too. It was like Timmy, yeah. Timmy Too Hop.
We had a fella who was a Dirty Jacks regular who passed away on us. He was taking a selfie in Mexico and grabbed a live wire and he's no longer with us. We made a beer for him. We called it Teddy Two Hops. Teddy Too Much.
So the origins of Trickster IPA, it's interesting because it was only designed for tap room only, you know, because in order for this business to grow, the flagship beers, and we don't even like using that name, flagship, it's kind of antiquated, but you have to grow and you have to evolve, but you also have to do so like in a very like authentic way. You know, you can't just completely like, you know, change your identity. So we wanted to make an IPA that was like, you know, modern but not hipster, just kind of let's work it through. Trickster was put through the evolutionary process in the tap rooms, and it took on so many different like iterations and variants. Like, when it was originally made, it was a style called an extra pale, which I don't know. It was just another one of those flash in the pan sort of beer styles, you know, like all the different red, black, white, blue IPA, brute IPA, triple IPA, all that stuff. And then for a while it was a double IPA. And then for a second it was a triple IPA. It was all these different things. But right now, I just poured a fresh one. It's this beautiful, like, light orange in the glass. It's got a little touch of haze, but it is not to be considered a hazy IPA or New England style by any stretch. You know, it definitely falls in that tropical IPA sort of a realm. You know, you've got Simcoe, El Dorado, Mosaic hops, and when these three hops get together, they're all great on their own. But what you get is just this great, like, stone fruit. It's like peach, papaya, bright orange zest. We just got into our most current. We just moved off contract and got onto our new one, where they're using super fresh hops for this right now. And I mean, you can smell it. Like, when I show up for work in the morning and I'm crossing the street, I know I know if they're canning Trickster all before I even walk through the main doors, because you can, when you get underneath the loading dock, you can smell it coming off the canning line.
Wow, that's one of the joys of that. So is the whole district smelling of, like, malt and hops all the time?
So there's this smell that, like, so what's interesting is, like, there's also a barbecue place that is smoking a whole hog meat, like, 24/7 on our block. So when you pull up, you're getting, you know, you're not only getting, like, you're getting that, like, you know, if you've ever, like, homebrewed before and you got the boil going, you know, and then you just added your hops, and then there's, like, this smoky, like, roasted pig smell. Like, it's a good vibe here. There are a lot of worse places to work, for sure.
Well, how about this, Dennis? Let's walk us through your neighborhood. So I'm coming to Green Man. Yeah. There's smells of malt and hops and smoky barbecue. What are a couple of places I should go to? Because I feel like this is the summer when people are going places, and I feel like Asheville is one of those.
It really feels that way. We're located right in the heart of the South Slope. We were the first one here. So if you live in Asheville, you've been here, you know we're here. We're kind of in the middle of it all. I think you can start and end at Green Man, but we don't have a restaurant. We don't sell liquor, and we sort of have a reputation for closing early, which I don't think is a bad thing. There's two Wicked Weeds within about a 7-iron from here. Burial is right behind us. So if it were me coming to Asheville with my buddies, I would probably, you know, it's kind of also a day drinking thing on the weekend, you know, so is it earlier thing to it. So if it were me, I would tell folks to go to Bramari or Wicked Weed to have some lunch. They're right next to each other. Bramari is a brewery that has a restaurant. Wicked Weed has a full restaurant, of course. Get some lunch, come to Green Man, have a Green Man lager, start it light, keep it easy. And then once you're done enjoying this, you got to go to Burial, which is about 50 yards away, probably.
Wow.
Probably less than that. If you want a cider, there's a great cidery right across the street from us called Urban Orchard. From there, you want to cross the street back to the north, and you want to go to Catawba Brewery, Catawba. They're our neighbor on the other side. They're about a pitching wedge from here. Enjoy one of their beers. Their White Zombie is a wit that is phenomenal and very popular in town. Keeping it light because you're day drinking still. And from there, you want to head up the street to Asheville Brewery. They've got a couple locations right next to each other. They've got an outdoor space that just opened that's killer. And they're starting to do some live music now at Summer Sitting. So by then, after a couple of beers there, you're probably going to want to take a shower and go back to your hotel, maybe take a quick siesta, come back to Green Man, you're going to ramp it up a little bit. Now you want to maybe do a Wayfarer IPA, which is our American citrus 6%er. That is a nice transition out of the light stuff.
and maybe make the round all over again. Get the nighttime vibe. If you're feeling like you want, if you want some liquor, there's a great distillery right next door to the cidery and Wikileaf Funkatorium, and that's called The Chemist. And then the Funkatorium is Wikileaf's sour facility. It's a great spot. So all those places, I think I named all of them. Oh, there's another brewery. Sorry, I missed Twin Leaf is right there too, right across from Wikileaf. So all these places, if you're following me, they're kind of jumping around. They're all within a half a mile of each other. It's an amazingly pedestrian friendly experience for sure.
I'd mention Eurisco as well. They're kind
Thank you.
They're downtown, but they're kind of hidden. But they make some of the best beer in town.
That sounds great, man. And what about food? What kind of food do you get? You know, in between there, besides going to a brewery.
Well, I might take that one. So, you know, we are lucky to have there's Buxton Hall, which is that's a place I was telling you about where, like, you know, when I roll up to work and it smells like, you know, smoked pork butt. It's, you know, because of them over there. That's Chef Elliot Moss. He's, you know, kind of like a local food celebrity chef, and has done a lot of projects in town. That's his barbecue place, and it's always great. There's a new pizza place, Paiza, where, you know, I know you say you're from New York. You're going to have my wife's from New Jersey. So we have a really hard time finding good pizza around here. Like, for sure. Yeah. It's really hard to find.
The pizza, food is coming. The beer is established, and the food is starting to pop up. And
yeah, I think things, you know, regional things like bagels and pizza and stuff like that is hard to find. But there is a you know, a pizza place called Paiza, just literally, you know, 50 yards down the street. That they just got started, and you know, they're doing some good things. So I see the food stuff on the South Slope. I mean, downtown's a different story, but on the South Slope, I think the food programs and things are going to really start.
You just reminded me, I met Elliot Moss once. I know Buxton Hall. He's well-known in the barbecue scene. And maybe it was 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, every year I host it's a barbecue event in New York City called Pig Island. And we used to do a thing where we were unloading pigs from the farm truck in this market in Manhattan. And the chefs would come and pick up the pigs. And this guy walks by and sees his whole truck full of pigs and snaps a photo. And it was Elliot Moss. Only time I ever met him, but he was pretty cool. He was just walking through New York and suddenly he sees a truck full of pigs. And he was pretty happy. So I can imagine, now that you told me, I can picture the smell coming out of Buxton Hall. And it's one of the places I want to go when I go to Asheville. So
we're thrilled to have
it. But when it blends with the Brew Day at Green Man, it's something special.
So it's like hops, malt, and pig. I like that. Well, let's we're gonna wrap this up, but like, okay, I'm also in the, there's Trickster, there's IPA. How many different beers do you like have going at a certain time in the tap room versus what's being distributed? Are you distributing everything, Dennis?
We package about 8 or 9 beers for distribution. Uniquely, the ESB IPA and Porter are still in bottles, which is unusual. But we have a session sour fruited Berliner Weiss called Tartberry that's extremely popular. We have a great lager. We've got a lot of IPAs. We have 18 taps at our tap rooms. And we're always coming out with something new every week, just about. I'm excited to we have a unique product called Gingers Have Soul. It's an alcoholic ginger beer that's, by style, an alcoholic ginger beer. But I think it's more than, I think it's kind of beyond seltzer. So we don't have a seltzer. A lot of guys, you know, we could have another podcast to talk about seltzer, which is having a profound effect on our industry. But this alcoholic ginger beer is kind of like a seltzer. And it's really taken off. We've had it for about a year and a half. We've been canning it for just less than a year. And I'm excited about that one. It's about our fourth or fifth bestseller here at the tap room. The Trickster is our number.
That's a traditional style, though, right? Like alcoholic ginger beer.
It is.
Right? It's fermented.
Yes. It is fermented sugar, I guess. Ours is the lowest in sugar than I've been able to find. A lot of the alcoholic ginger beers are super sweet, have tons of sugar. Ours does not, and it's been really popular. I'm excited about this product. So the name is there's an urban legend or some kind of myth that gingers or redheads, I'm a redhead, don't have a soul. Have you heard that one before, Jimmy?
I heard that gingers are more sexually responsive, but
hey, okay, all right, go with that.
You're good.
Anyway, it's a play on that. So that's been our exciting product launch.
And excuse me for saying that.
Not at all.
But it's interesting though that you know, you guys are talking about like trends and just, you know, how popular this ginger beer has been. Dennis mentioned how popular our lager is. Well, what I've been seeing is like it is really interesting is how popular our lighter, like low ABV, like we've done some low-cal stuff, we've done some gluten-reduced stuff. It's just interesting to see over the years, like when I first started and it was, you know, like I said, when I was like, you know, building Taplist, like it was all about, I want your highest ABV, I want your biggest, baddest, you know, double IPA, I want all these things. And then like, it's just kind of cool, like kind of going off of what Dennis was saying, that like it's been one of the longest running trends that I've noticed where it's shifting from big to small. You know, it's shifting from heavy to light. You know, it's kind of shifting from excess to like more refined, you know. So like our low ABV stuff, you know, Jimmy, you were asking about our tap list. I would say out of 18, you know, we don't go over like, you know, 6.5%, you know, like, you know, Trickster's like a 7 and that's like high for us. But like, you know, we're lucky to have the brew team that we have. Like they're very up on it. They're very talented. And they're putting out lagers now that are just, you know, we've got a dark Czech lager that's like 4% and people love it. You know, like it's just really interesting to see the shift in trends, you know?
Yeah. I think the answer to hard seltzer, I don't want to do a show about hard seltzer, but no. I think the answer is just more low ABV beers that are really good. Or like your ginger beer that's actually fermented. And I have friends that a guy that I know that makes a alcoholic kombucha, but they're actually interesting beverages. And I think that's, you guys have the challenge in front of you. And I hope you don't make a hard seltzer. So
the younger drinkers are driving this trend. They're healthier. They're more mindful of what they put in their bodies. They want the alcohol, but they want less sugar, less carbs, blah, blah, blah. You know this. They want more, you know, to be able to rationalize in your head that, well, this is better for me. It's lower in sugar or whatever. And that's why we've seen the meteoric rise of seltzer. I'm excited about our ginger beer. We put out Green Man Lager, which is a 4.2 low-cal, 120 calories. The original name of that beer, which is our second bestseller at the tap rooms, was actually, what's your lightest beer? Was the name of the beer. Because we get asked that question incessantly here.
Yeah. No, he's right. And that was how people ordered their beer. Like, you know, 12 years ago when I, like, people would say, you know, what's your highest, heaviest, you know, biggest one. Now it's like, they're like, what's your lightest beer? You know, do you have anything that's like gluten-free? Do you have anything that's like not hoppy? You know, it's a very interesting.
Yeah. Hey, last thing before we go, Dennis, back to when you first found Green Man Brewery. You know, we've heard a lot about you. So just tell us like the general details of how you bought a brewery back then, because it seems like years ago, suddenly people were paying crazy prices for breweries or the brands. What was it like buying a brewery that was really just a little tap room back then?
it was very rewarding, and it was very questionable. A lot of folks close to me were like, why are you doing that? It wasn't for sale. Didn't have a for sale sign. I was lucky enough to have been able to have been introduced to the owner, Joe, the founder. And I had lunch with him, and I said, "Hey, man, would you ever sell your brewery? Would you be interested? Because I think you got, you know," and he had a lot going on. He had other businesses, and I felt like I could really do something with it. I was then 38, and I'm a creative person. And I had a lot of great ideas. I think I had great ideas, some bad ideas of my tenure here too, but I had a lot of ideas for what this thing could be, a lot of vision, and a lot of it has come to fruition. And just a quick shout out to my wife, Wendy, who came into the picture a few years later. We couldn't do it without her. And we are a closely family held business with no outside interests. It's just my family. And I'm very proud of it. And it was to answer your question, extremely rewarding. And I'm grateful to have this brewery and to be able to spread joy to folks and make them happy, especially last year.
Well, that's a great story, Dennis. And that's something I love. I just love the old school business aspect of it. It's like same thing. I've had situations where there's an old restaurant and the person wants to retire or get out of it, and someone else comes in and makes it better, and everybody's happy, you know? Seems like you built on this great vibe. And I actually respect the way you've done it, because it seems like you're paying homage to that original Green Man. So
it was a lot of hard work. We've had a lot of fun along the way as well.
Yeah. And we're definitely going to come down and see you guys. Just want to thank you one more time for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to Eric and Dennis. Big shout out to our engineer Armin Spengen and our producing intern Caroline Fox. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time. Oh, and by the way, maybe we'll be down in Asheville this summer. See you later.
Come see us. Thanks, guys.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.